Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for March 21st. Well, let's see. First, David Petraeus could move into Blair House, which is more than sufficient for a leader of the nation. We turn the White House into a museum, then we convert the Capitol building into a state-of-the-art veterans facility to ensure the best care for them. The recently completed, incredibly over-budget Visitor Center could serve as the museum for the just-displaced Congress, and after the late-night talk shows end at 12:30, our screens show a fluttering flag as the national anthem plays, just like the old days when I was growing up before the test pattern pops up and we all go to bed. Then, I guess I was just daydreaming. Turning to existing state of affairs in the United States of America, the past week being one of the low points in our history, let's dive right into this AIG mess, shall we? I was putting together my annual box of T-shirts to my friends on the island of Yap in Micronesia, and the Manchester United AIG shirt I've written of is winding its way there as I write. I could joke about it before, but no longer. If I was caught wearing it today, I'd be shot on the spot, no doubt, and then my head would be lopped off just like they do in Mexico and stuffed in a cooler, hopefully at least with some Dos Equis. No wonder current AIG CEO Edward Liddy doesn't want the names released of those being paid bonuses. Liddy testified before Congress this week that AIG still has some $1.6 trillion in toxic assets, along with a myriad of businesses to unwind, in the worst possible market to do so if one wants to attain maximum value, and that while he had nothing to do with old contracts paying retention bonuses of $165 million, he needed to honor said agreements because only these folks from the disgraced financial products derivatives division could successfully complete the task and return to the American taxpayers as much of the $173 billion it has received between the Treasury and the Federal Reserve as possible. I hope by now you all realize that talk of turning a profit from last fall is out the window. We also learned this week that the issue of the bonuses was known by many, particularly the Federal Reserve, 4 months, and Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, at least 2 days before he told the President, one Barack Obama, a.k.a. the Dude. For his part, President Obama, until this bombshell revelation, was finally doing what some of us have wanted: inject a little optimism into his endless screen appearances that heretofore have been like some slasher series. Catastrophe 1, Catastrophe 2, Catastrophe 3. By the way, is Obama a SAG member? Can someone check on that for me? He's certainly on television enough. I am very confident about our long-term prospects, he said 2 weeks ago in a meeting with business leaders. Things 2 years ago were not as good as we thought because there were a lot of underlying weaknesses in the economy, and they're not as bad as we think they are now. That was Barack Obama. Not coincidentally, as Obama talked of better days ahead, Wall Street was in the midst of rallying. Coupled with happy talk from our leading banks and Ben Bernanke, we could see some light at the end of the tunnel. But what a difference a day makes. 24 little hours, as Dinah Washington once sang. All hell broke loose across the land when the AIG bonus news hit, especially in the halls of Congress, an institution peopled with the small-minded and weak, an institution that in this case acted like a herd of wildebeest, not to disparage these noble sentries of the African plains by comparing them to the likes of Congressman Brad Sherman, who actually reminds me of a marmoset, but I digress. Yes, upon learning of the AIG bonuses, the corrupt representatives of the people screamed off with their heads as they stuck their fingers into the wind to gauge the importune plaints of their constituencies. Do one of two things, said Senator Charles Ethanol Grassley of the bonus recipients, 95% of whom you'd be more than happy to have as your next-door neighbor and to water your plants while you were away. Resign or commit suicide, he said. Which I mused, where is that Spartan army from 300 when you need it? Upon mission accomplished, then I'd install Petraeus. An editorial from the Washington Post. Short-sighted, opportunistic, and irresponsible aptly describe the actions of those who fueled the debacle on Wall Street. They are also apt descriptors for lawmakers more focused on currying favor with a public outraged at the bonuses handed out by bailed out companies than on fixing the fundamental and still potentially disastrous cracks in the financial system. By changing the terms of a deal months after it was entered into, Congress will show the government to be an unreliable partner, further draining confidence from the financial system and endangering long-term recovery. Yesterday, the House had the feel of a mob scene, with lawmaker after furious lawmaker vying for floor time to rail against the $165 million in taxpayer-funded bonuses lavished on employees of American International Group's disgraced Financial Products Division. House members rushed through a bill to impose an effective tax rate of 90% on bonuses paid to AIG employees and employees of other firms that accepted at least $5 billion from the Troubled Assets Relief Program, though when then-Treasury Secretary Henry M. Paulson Jr. pressed many of those firms to take the funds last fall, government interference in their compensation systems was not part of the deal. The legislation, approved by a vote of 328-93, would affect employees who receive bonuses on or after January 1st and whose household incomes exceed $250,000. Late yesterday afternoon, Thursday, lawmakers on the Senate Finance Committee introduced their own broader version of the bonus clawback that would affect firms that accepted as little as $100 million of government funds. The Washington Post continued, "We understand that legislators are hearing from furious constituents, and we understand why those voters are angry. But elected officials have a responsibility to lead, not just to pander, to weigh what makes sense for the country, not just what feels good. The effective confiscation of legally earned and contractually promised payments may well be unconstitutional. It is almost certain to be unhelpful. Rather than bringing reason to the debate, President Obama has stoked the anger, and last night the White House commented favorably on the House action. Perhaps Mr. Obama believes that only by lining up with an angry public now can he persuade it and Congress to approve the hundreds of billions more he will need to right the credit system. But he might have expressed his sympathy with public anger over irresponsible behavior in the financial sector while also steering the government in a more constructive direction. The absence of backbone on either end of Pennsylvania Avenue this week could carry a steep price." That was an editorial from the Washington Post. One figure who should be as well known as Bernie Madoff but isn't when it comes to AIG is Joseph Cassano, former head of the Financial Products Unit. Cassano, with former chairman Hank Greenberg's blessing, headed up the unit that began dealing in credit default swaps out of Wilton, Connecticut, as well as what was dubbed the London Casino. New York Daily News wrote the other day of him, he was said to be smart and hardworking, but arrogant and given to verbal abuse. Cassano himself once said of his division and the products they churned out, "It is hard for us, without being flippant, to ever see a scenario within any kind of rhyme or reason that would see us losing $1 in any of those transactions." Well, he ended up pocketing $280 million in cash and an additional $34 million in severance. At first, after being fired a year ago, he continued to receive $1 million a month as a consulting fee under his, quote, retirement agreement. Why isn't Cassano in jail? Someday he will be. Keep the faith. The Daily News reports his days now are occupied with investor suits, including one filed a week ago by the Jacksonville Police and Fire Pension Fund that charges Cassano and his pals knew or recklessly ignored facts indicating that AIG faced mounting losses even as they assured investors all was well. The news concludes it sounds like fraud. Well, of course it is. And get this, Joseph Cassano, a graduate of Brooklyn College, apparently has never given his alma mater a dime. That tells you everything you need to know about the man. He can't even pretend to be a good guy like so many of the other disgraced Wall Street kingpins whose names adorn libraries and medical centers. Turning to the economy, industrial production was down in February, again 1.4% and 11% year over year, the worst performance since 1975, while the inflation data was mixed. I know everyone is concerned about inflation, what with the trillions coursing through our veins, but I'm one guy who isn't going to lose any sleep over it. If that in turn means I lose out on another commodity bubble in anticipation of a big spike in prices, so be it. There's just as good a chance of deflation, not inflation. And certainly all the evidence points to it today. How's that raise you asked your boss for coming along? Oh, you were afraid to ask? Case closed. Globally, the World Bank lowered its growth forecast for China to 6.5%. But stressed the country seems to be holding up relatively well, while the IMF lowered anew its forecast for the Eurozone and calling for a 3.2% contraction in 2009. The United Kingdom house prices fell 11.5% for the month of January over year-ago levels, while unemployment, now 6.5%, is predicted to rise to 10% by year-end. And in Ireland, its finance minister is now predicting unemployment will reach 12%, while an analyst is calling for commercial property values to decline, get this, as much as 70% from the peak. In the United States, Leon Black, founder of private equity firm Apollo Management, says that when it comes to commercial real estate, it's a black hole. $4 trillion of debt, and you know not all of it's bad, but a lot of it is diminished, and that really hasn't been addressed, said Leon Black. Then you have the issue of protectionism, which, despite a pledge last November by the G20 to avoid any such steps, later reaffirmed the other week by finance ministers, is in the forefront of debate as the U.S. and Mexico are now going at it. We can be such incredible hypocrites. In total violation of the North American Free Trade Agreement, the U.S. has closed the border to Mexican trucking. So this time, after being jerked around on the issue for years, Mexico retaliated. Good for them, and bad for our businesses, particularly in agriculture, that will be severely impacted. Turning to Wall Street, we start off the week on such a positive note, thanks in no small part to Fed Chairman Bernanke's star turn on 60 Minutes, where he said, "This decline will begin to moderate and we'll begin to see a leveling off. We won't be back to full employment, but we will, I hope, see the end of these declines that have been so strong in the last couple of quarters." And then he added, "We'll see the recession coming to an end probably this year. We'll see recovery beginning next year." Forget for a moment the fact the chairman's forecasting record is miserable. We're talking keeping the people upbeat, and maybe having two or three of them buy a car or wash or dryer. So the market was rallying, helped along by respectable earnings news out of Oracle and IBM's sudden play for Sun Microsystems. But then the AIG mess hit, and it became a mighty struggle for stocks to keep their heads above water. But in the end, the Dow Jones managed to eke out a gain, up 0.8% to 72.78. This is incredible, but the now two-week winning streak is the longest for the Dow since late April, early May. That's what I call a market crash. The S&P 500 added 1.6%, and NASDAQ picked up 1.8%. With NASDAQ now off just 7.6% for the year. The news out of Congress spoiled what had been a stupendous rally in the financial sector. Shares in Bank of America, for example, traded as high as 8.50 on Thursday before closing the week at 6.19, while Morgan Stanley's stock went from 24.80 to 20.20 over the same time period. Alas, this coming week we are told the Geithner rescue plan for the banks is to be revealed. In the bond market on Wednesday, the 10-year Treasury staged its biggest rally since the aftermath of the October 1987 market crash, following word the Federal Reserve was not only buying another $850 billion in mortgage-backed and Fannie and Freddie securities, but also $300 billion in Treasuries, soon, specifically 2 to 10 years. The hope is to lower mortgage rates as a boost to the housing sector, and rates did indeed plummet to 4.75% for a 30-year fixed, if you qualified. The Fed would like to see this go down further, to 4%, but don't count on it. If you are so fortunate, snap up anything below 5%. Don't dither. The 10-year had already edged up from a low yield of 2.50% on the news to the above 2.64% by a week's end, referring to information I have in my Week in Review column. Speaking of real estate, February housing starts showed a surprising increase of 583,000. I wouldn't draw too much out of this single data point without follow-through, however. That's your Week in Review for March 16 to March 20. I'm Brian Trumbore, and you can catch the rest at stocksandnews.com. Have a great week.